You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
All right, today we're going to talk about how to prioritize your spouse, especially during child-raising years. So why do I have the credentials to speak on this topic? It's because I've made every mistake known. Actually, I am terrible at prioritizing my spouse. I went into marriage totally not understanding the concept of becoming unified and kind of having this idea that I was just going to live my independent life as a, you know, and he was going to be do his thing, and we were just going to do that side by side. And God has been gracious with me, and he's taught me the importance of prioritizing my spouse. And it's been, like I said, I have made like every mistake that is known, I have made it. But God is a big God. He's personally involved, and he can teach us how to love. And that's so thankful for that, because my life would be completely different if I didn't have that. I am reiterating what Sherry just said. Some of this stuff is like, duh. You're going to hear it and be like, oh, I know that. But like she said, if you're fallen like I am, you need to have these reminders. And it's so helpful to have reminders about even things that we have heard before. My prayer for today has been, there's kind of a lot of stuff here. And my prayer is that each of you guys would have something that God would put on your heart that was one or two things, not like this whole, not like I'm going to do all these things, but maybe there's something that God can personally communicate to you about an area that could be something to take away. So today, just to let you guys know, we're going to talk about why it's important to prioritize, why we need to talk about this at all, and then prioritizing oneness, communication, understanding and respect, time spent with others, and one obstacle, having a critical spirit. So the first question, why is it important to prioritize our spouse? Because it's God's design. Genesis 2:24 says, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. This is the way God designed marriage, for us to be one with our spouses. So the purpose of marriage is to experience and reflect the image of God, to reflect his oneness. So therefore, we need to prioritize our spouse by building and nurturing oneness, what we'll talk about. Also in Ephesians 5:33, it says, each individual among you is to love his own wife, even as himself, and the wife must see to it that she respects her husband. And so again, God's design is that marriage is a place to not only reflect him, but also to be a place of honor, respect, and love. And he wants that for each couple who's married. It's also important to prioritize it, your spouse, it, because having a good marriage is one of the best things you can do for your children. It creates stability. It actually gives them a picture of a tangible picture of God's love and unity. It gives them a vision for the kind of future they could have in terms of having a great marriage. And it helps them develop emotionally and intellectually. Gottman, so I'm going to quote John Gottman a lot today, and he wrote several books, but two that I'm quoting are Seven Principles for Making Marriage Work and Baby Makes Three. And he said, the greatest gift a couple can give their baby is a loving relationship, because that relationship nourishes baby development. The stronger the connection between parents, the healthier the child can grow, both emotionally and intellectually. So this is actually the best thing we can do for our kid. We think taking care of the squeaky wheel, the child's need at that moment, is the most important thing. And maybe, you know, certain needs are at that moment. But long term, this is the most important thing that we can do for them. Multiple studies show that kids from healthy marriages are healthier and have more successful lives. And so if we're thinking about, you know, that tremendous love that we suddenly have for these children, this is the way we can love them best, by prioritizing our spouse. It's also important to prioritize your spouse because marriage lasts longer than child raising. So the truth is, one day your children will move out, if you're lucky. So we need to look forward to and realize that we can have a great life as empty nesters, and we really can, I'm here to say. But we're gonna have that if we choose to prioritize our spouse along the way. We're not gonna suddenly like have our kids move out and be like, oh, we haven't talked in 18 years, but now we're gonna have a great life together. So this is the most important relationship in your life, actually. It can feel like that's not true. It can feel like your kids are the most important, but really, your spouse is your most important relationship. Why do we need to discuss this at all? Because 2/3 of parents experience a significant drop in their couple relationship quality after having a baby. That 2/3 of the people report that they're more dissatisfied in their relationship once they have kids. And that's not God's design at all. God's design is for that relationship to flourish and for that to impact kids. But the truth is, it's tough, as many of you pointed out in saying why it's hard to prioritize. It's such a difficult transition for many people. Gone is the carefree life where, you know, I remember after we had kids, Scott and I would say, why did we ever have a dirty dish in the house? Like, it just seems like, what were we doing with our time? And so it's like, you know, there's another friend of mine recently who had a baby said, oh, I was like, it's the weekend. And then I realized the weekend is the same as every other day. So it's like the gone is sort of like that idea, like, I'm just going to do what I want when I want. It just doesn't happen that way. So with this new need, we have a new need to figure out how to relate, even though our time is squished, even though we have more restrictions, even though there's more needs, even though there's more distractions. We have to talk about it because we have to figure out how to do it in this challenging situation. So the first thing that we'll talk about is prioritizing oneness in your relationship. So you're on the same team. If you ever went through any pre-marriage counseling, you probably heard this before, like when you go into marriage, you go from being me, my agenda, my ideas, to we, our agenda, our ideas. I think parenting sometimes kind of makes us shrink back into me, because it's like my time is so taken by others that I'm like worried about, like, how am I going to get what I need? I need this time just to myself. I don't want one more person trying to take something from me. And so it's like we have this drift that I think just happens naturally, where we're like, I got to look out for myself because I'm doing all these other, taking care of all these other people all day long. So we need to prioritize time together. This is one of those things that I'm sure is sort of like, duh, of course we do. Dates are important. Making dates with your spouse are important. Doesn't have to always be going out, but making time is important. I know this, I'm saying watch out for living parallel lives or becoming business partners. And this is something that happened to me and my husband. When our kids were 2 and 4, we realized that we had kind of fallen into this. We weren't like super disunified or anything. We were working together, but we were really sort of just like divide and conquer. You do this, I'll do this. Taking care of what needs to be taken care of. And we had really like stopped taking the time to like date and enjoy each other. And so this is something that can creep in, like the very things that you guys mentioned and why it's hard to prioritize. It's just like we only have limited time. We're tired. But this is something we need to prioritize. We need to figure out how to do it. So my husband and I, at that time, we were like, oh my God, we need to really prioritize our time together. We need to make sure that we're making that time super important. And we started basically redating. So, you know, I don't know what your situation is, but this idea, it's easy for it to creep in the midst of our busy lives. So this includes like continuing to get to know each other. There's a lot of, you know, Gottman's Seven Principles for Making Marriage Work has a lot of ideas in it. Gottman also has an app for cards that you can look at and ask each other questions and things like that. There's also some ideas in preparing and the, there's a, if, what we use now for pre-marriage is this thing called Prepare and Enrich. There's some ideas in there about how to relate. There's the idea, Gottman puts forth the idea of like knowing your spouse by examining love maps and stuff like that. And it's like there are some things that you can use to do this. And also, you can just make your own things up. But the idea is make the time for it. Be flexible, be creative. Do what your spouse wants to do. I don't know how you guys are, but in my generation, there were a lot of women in particular who wanted their spouse to plan the date and to make it go well, and they were really upset when the date wasn't perfect. And if we're holding out for that, that's a terrible idea. We need to be open to doing what our spouse wants to do. We need to come up with ideas that we want to do. We need to make sure that we're just being flexible and encouraging involvement together. And if if your spouse likes to do things that you hate and you sometimes choose to do them, that's a great way to, concrete way to show them that you actually care about them and their opinion. And we should just try to be thankful and enjoy the time that we get together. Also, we just need to fight to find time. I know you guys are all going to adopt Scott and my plan, but what we ended up doing weirdly is we spent about half an hour together every day at 5:30 in the morning. Our kids woke up at 6 or 6:30. My husband teaches, so he already was getting up at 5:30. So we found this time, like this is a time we can touch base every day and just find out what's going on with each other. Now, I'm not recommending you all get up at 5:30, but I'm saying fight for some kind of time together. And of course, pray together, make time for that. Like look for these moments when you can do stuff like that. Like maybe it's just in the car. That's like dead space. Maybe there's a good time at night or a good time in the morning or whatever, but figure out how to what works for you and do it and prioritize it. Part of that getting to know each other is nurturing fondness and admiration. And Gottman again says, fondness and admiration are two of the most crucial elements in a rewarding and long-lasting romance. Although happily married couples may feel driven to distraction at times by their partner's personality flaws or what they're not doing, they still feel that the person they married is worthy of honor and respect. The simple reason is that fondness and admiration are antidotes for contempt. So this, you'll sort of see this running through as we talk about different things because it will come up in gratitude as well. But really nurturing and reminding yourself of why you love your spouse is really important. Part of oneness. And of course, sex is an important part of oneness. And we have to prioritize that. And everyone's so different on this, and it can be challenging because maybe you are tired and maybe people have been pawing at you all day and things like that. And so it can be challenging. But my husband, when when we've gotten together with couples who are struggling, and maybe one of them is saying, like, usually the guys want sex more often than women. That's not always the case. I've had friends who have opposites. But, like, when we've gotten together with people and someone says, he just always wants to have sex with me. My husband says, yeah, he wants to have sex with you. Like, that's a good thing. He's not wanting to have sex with someone else. He's wanting to nurture his relationship with you. That's an important piece of information to remember. Like, we want to engage in this gift that God's given us that is oneness. And so we need to remember not to think of that like, this is a bother, but like, this is a great thing that you have a spouse who actually wants to be romantic and wants to have sex with you. So we do need to talk about it. Talk about if there are differences or there are challenging things, if you guys have difference of opinion. Also pray about it. A lot of people don't pray about their sex life. It's really important to draw close to God. This is one of the things God has created and he's made us for. So it's really important to involve him. Make it a priority. Practice affection. Practice being affectionate throughout the day and week. And welcome affection. I traditionally was always like, whatever job I'm doing, I'm totally into at the moment. So, like, if Scott would come up and just try to be affectionate with me and I'm washing dishes, in my head I'm just like, don't even touch me, I'm washing dishes. I'm doing this important thing, you know. God had to be like, tap, tap, tap. That's not as important as returning affection to your husband. You feel like whatever you're doing at the moment is the most important thing, but really the most important thing is responding to a bid from your husband. So with oneness, I feel like this is how God has created us, and we really need to take that seriously, and we need to prioritize our relationship that way. We also need to prioritize communication. I say use the prepare and enrich questions. So these are these questions that they say that you should ask each other every day. I say every week. When my husband and I were first married, we were given some questions almost identical to this by friends who had been in counseling. And this thing was great for our marriage, and we used it for years and years and years. Asking each other, what did you enjoy most about your relationship this week? What was most dissatisfying about your relationship? And how can you be helpful to each other? And listening to what each other says. This is huge in terms of making each other feel cared about. It sounds so canned, and like, we don't like things that are like, now we're going to ask our three questions. But honestly, I can say, when you start to get that habit, it just becomes a habit. It's not canned anymore. They also talk about this thing doing daily compliments, and we're going to talk about gratitude through here, but just keep in mind thoughts of, like, how can I be authentically communicating something good to my spouse? That's the sheet. You can talk about what you're reading, but learn to listen to each other and use active listening. Repeat back to each other to make sure that you're understanding. Don't just use a question to get ready for you to be able to say what you want to say. Learn to state what you need. So, for example, in my relationship, we would always, when we were getting ready for home church, to host home church, we would almost always, like, get all this tension going on between us because we had different ideas of how we needed to set up and clean and things like that. And for a long time, I just got mad at him and never said anything. And then at one point, I was just like, it would be helpful if you could do such and such instead of this other thing. And he was like, oh man, awesome. He started asking me, like, what's the best thing I can do for you right now? Now, that sounds like that's prioritizing myself. instead of him. But actually, it's prioritizing him because I'm giving him the honor of actually communicating what I'm feeling instead of just giving him the cold shoulder and sort of like getting angry that things aren't going the way I want and expecting him to read my mind. So this type of communication, we think our spouses should know. We think our spouse should know, go get that baby, it's crying. We think our spouse should know, like, oh, the baby doesn't like that kind of food or whatever. But we need to actually learn to say things to each other instead of just assuming, getting mad because they're doing something that they should know. Also, the idea of communication is, are you thinking about encouraging and appreciating your spouse? And I'm going to lump this all into practicing gratitude. We know from studies that gratitude is good for us. It changes our brains. It's also really good for the people around us, for us to verbalize gratitude to them. So consider picking one thing each day to be thankful for and meditating that on that about your spouse. Fill in your brain. I say one thing because, you know, some of us don't have any more space for anything but one thing. But it's like, what about thinking all day about something that you're grateful for your spouse? Imagine the impact of that when you see them. It changes our demeanor. Praise them for who they are. And reflect on the impact they've had on you and others. So this is about verbalizing our gratitude. Sometimes some of us are better than others at verbalizing, but it's really important to learn how to say the things that we're grateful for, because that's how we impact our spouses the most. Again, Gottman from Seven Principles says, this active focusing on your spouse's merits allows you to nurture gratefulness for what you have instead of resenting what is missing. Many couples do not realize that they're neglecting to cherish each other. And I think this mind, allowing this gratitude to sink into our mind, really, really has an impact. You know how when you're like super bitter, well, maybe you guys have never been bitter, but you know, sometimes when you have this like bitterness or something, it kind of oozes out of you. Like when that person, like when you run into that person or something, you're just like, bleh. Well, gratitude can ooze out of us too. And so as we think about that and we meditate on our spouse's merits, it can go a long way to actually enabling us to greet them with the kind of appreciation that it's good for them to experience. This quote, I liked it because it kind of goes to that prepare and enrich thing too, but sometimes couples resist searching for and expressing gratitude for their spouse's positive behavior because they tell me doing so feels phony to them. But developing a positive habit doesn't sugarcoat a relationship. Instead, it resets it to a more realistic perspective. I love this quote because we think, oh, if I have to drum up gratitude, then something's not authentic about that. No, it's actually getting a realistic view of your spouse. It's not trying to puff up all these like false things that are true about them. It's appreciating the things that really are good about them. And so that's important. I remember when I'm going to talk about bickering over house jobs, but I remember when I realized like my husband does everything in the yard. Like I don't touch a thing except to go out and get stuff from our garden. And realizing like, oh wow, that's something that I should be grateful for, that I don't have to mow lawn, I don't even have to weed the garden, I only get to benefit from its fruit. And so, you know, that's not saying, you're the best gardener in the whole world. It's saying like, wow, thanks for taking care of the place so that I don't have to be bothered with that. Also, here's another thing from Gottman. Search for the small everyday moments. Catch your partner doing some little thing right and then offer a genuine appreciation. Like, I love the way you handled that teacher conference yesterday or whatever your thing is. Like, just try to catch those small things and mention them. Just, you know, in general with communication, it's like figure out the ways to let them know they matter to you and communicate them. So what's their love language? Have you paid any attention to that lately? Do they like words of affirmation, acts of service, physical touch, quality time, gifts? Practice the thing that they actually like. So call or text them during the day. Do their job without complaining. Initiate physical affection. Plan time together or be creative with gifts. You know, like, just think about them. Again, I know you're tired. I'm not trying to be like, just do all these extra things. But like a little bit of concentration on what your spouse loves can go a long way. Also, concerning communication, learn to say you're sorry. This is also an important thing in terms of prioritizing them, not expecting them to be the one who always has to initiate saying they're sorry. All right, prioritizing understanding and respect. 1 Peter 3:7 says, in the same way you husbands must give honor to your wives, treat your wife with understanding as you live together. And then I already read Ephesians 5, but each husband is to love his own wife the same as himself, and the wife must see to it that she respects her husband. So you have these two ideas in Scripture often that women in particular need understanding and men in particular need respect. And that's biblical. But I think sometimes they kind of, depending on the couple, they also kind of blend. I mean, I think men need understanding too. And I think women want to be respected too. So as we go through these things, they're meant to sort of allow God to kind of direct your attention to if there's something here for you. Spouses can disrespect each other sometimes without even knowing it. I feel like this was the story of my life. I qualify what my husband says a lot. So like he'll say blah, blah, blah. And I'll say, well, not exactly that. I think it was this. I did that so much that it's like I'm really demeaning him because I'm saying he doesn't really know it. I'm like correcting him. Also our tone, we don't hear our tone. That's a fact. We don't actually hear the tone we're using, but everyone else hears it. And also, sometimes we're asking a question. This also I did a lot. Like, I was just asking. I was asking with a motive, usually. These are all ways to be disrespectful without realizing it. It's things that we need to ask God to direct our attention to. We need to listen to our spouses when they tell us this stuff instead of fight it. Like, I would fight it and be like, I was just asking you because I'm interested. And like, it's like, he knows more than I do that I was disrespecting him. So like being aware that we can default to this. Our mindset is crucial when it comes to this. And we talked about that a little already with thinking about fondness and admiration. But how often do you think happily about your partner when you're apart? Do you reflect with pride on his or her many wonderful traits? Such thoughts comprise cherishing, which is a critical component of a couple's fondness and admiration system. I say, do you spend your time thinking about how he or she didn't do this or that right? How his or her chores aren't done? How he or she has wronged you by not acknowledging what you do? Thinking about my rights, my service? These are the things that can cloud up our thinking. We really, really need to fight for thinking right and allowing God to transform our thinking to be more often reflecting on the good. Cherishing, Gottman says, is a habit of mind in which when you're separated during the course of the day, you maximize thoughts of your partner's positive qualities and minimize thoughts of negative ones. This is not to say that you don't bring up issues. Don't take this wrong. But this is to say that our default often is to kind of think about the things that aren't right. And as we develop this habit of mind, it can transform the way our spouse feels understood and respected. If we are truly fighting the fight in our minds to try to understand and respect him or her, we have to be willing to do this mind work. This is really the Christian life. A lot of times a lot of it takes place in the mind, and this is no different. Prioritizing spouse, it's got to start in our minds. We have to take it seriously. We have to do the hard work. So also part of living in an understanding and respectful way is accepting them for who they are with all their flaws instead of trying to change them. You might say, how can I accept and love them when they're irritating? It's a good question. Maybe they're doing the same thing over and over, like, maybe I did that in my marriage, always made many vows and then did the same thing again. Well, the way we can accept and love them is the same way God loves and accepts us. We have to think about it that way. We have to think about trying to have God's perspective rather than our own. Our own is going to default to the flesh and critique. But God's perspective is one who he granted us forgiveness at our worst, and he continues to love us despite that, and we can learn how to have that perspective with our husbands or wives. Acceptance is crucial. It's virtually impossible for people to heed advice, unless they believe the other person understands, respects, and accepts them for who they are. Before you ask your spouse to change the way he or she drives, eats, vacuums, or makes love, you must make sure your partner feels known and respected rather than criticized or demeaned. It's like so much harder to have a conversation about anything challenging if our spouses feel that, oh, here's my spouse again just telling me what I do wrong. That is a recipe for unhappy marriage. And just think of the implications of that for the little ones. Little ones immersed in unhappy, two people living together who are unhappy is terrible. Try to truly understand their perspective. Not just, you know, tip your hat to it, but actually try to actually listen to what they're saying and try to understand it, even if it's really different from yours. And develop a sense of humor about your own weakness and theirs. This comes up in the Gottman book that people who maintain a good marriage, couples like these who maintain a good marriage, have learned to mellow about their partner's faults. And this is like a real, I see this in like friendships that I have. Couples who learn to laugh about their own weaknesses, that goes a long way to this oneness, unity, respect and understanding. And so like when my husband says, when I start to qualify my husband, he'll be like, are you going to qualify me all day or just like for these couple things? And so it's like, if you know that it's your fault and if he knows, it's a good thing to be able to take yourself not so seriously and actually just admit, yeah, that's how I am. So one thing that's really important is to bicker over who does the most work and to meditate on how much you do more than your spouse. Just kidding. That's not a good plan. But I bring this one up in particular because I feel like this is a thing that happens in almost every marriage when kids are involved. That it's like somehow we realize like, well, I do way more than my spouse does. So, you know, I mean, he doesn't understand. She doesn't understand. I say, notice what your spouse does. Please pay attention. It's not usually 0 and 100, even though we feel that way. Express appreciation for each work. If your spouse works outside of the house, please be grateful for that. If your spouse stays at home with the kids, please be grateful for that. It's like we need to acknowledge that neither one of these things is better than the other. They're both super important. Deny the lie that your job is harder than his or hers. That just pops into our heads. Like, well, you don't understand. This is what I had to do all day. And, you know, the other person's like, well, you don't understand. This is what I had to do all day. This gets nowhere. So just realize that work, whether it's at home or outside of the home, is hard. And both are going to feel like they need a break from working. So also, practice and verbalize forgiveness. And don't keep score. And know that you're both difficult to live with. It took me a few years to figure out I was also difficult to live with. It's embarrassing. But it's like, both are difficult. We're all messed up. We all say the wrong things, do the wrong things. All right, then prioritize their time with others. This is super important. Help your spouse maintain a Christ-centered perspective. Do everything you can to help them prioritize biblical relationships. I see a lot of times people sabotaging this. Especially, it's more common for it to be sabotaged by the person who stays home with the kids wanting so desperately to get out or get some time to themselves that they have their spouse not go hang out with their friends or something like that. Like, encourage them not to hang out with their friends because I need your help here at home. Man, I mean, we have to encourage regular fellowship meetings. Don't both stay home. Like, okay, if you have two children who are projectile vomiting and both of you need to stay home because it's just like a chaos, that's fine. But like, what I see sometimes is like, maybe one is tired and the other one's like, I'm kind of tired too. Maybe we should both just stay home. It's like, no, don't do that. Try to understand where the person's coming from, but gently push for their engagement. We don't want to end up sabotaging our spouse's engagement with fellowship and with their friends. Encourage special fellowship opportunities, retreats, weekends away, nights out. Encourage time with friends, and also encourage time alone. And you got to figure out a way for both spouses to get some time alone. Just figure out a deal. Like, this time, this day on this time, I'm going to take care of the kids while you go do this, and this day and time, you can go do this. Just figure out a way to make that work. But this is super important. We do not want to have this, it's unfortunate that sometimes a husband will be more likely to be like, well, you've had a rough day, so I'm just going to stay home so you can go. And I'm not saying there's not a place for that, but I'm just saying don't get into the habit where one is always missing fellowship opportunities for the other. Because what's going to happen is those relationships, they start to erode. And we want our spouses to have strong relationships in the body of Christ. Okay, last thing. An obstacle is having a critical spirit. Wives and husbands can do this too sometimes, tend to think their critiques will get them what they want. So this is from the book Love and Respect. Some wives act disrespectfully in order to send a message to their husband that she feels unloved. She thought this would motivate him to love her and appreciate her. She said, I thought if I did all this, he'd get the message that I was hurting, frustrated, and angry, and that he'd move toward me with understanding and love. Okay, this goes back to the communication thing. Don't think that by you just expressing your dissatisfaction with him all the time, that's going to cause him to want to move toward you in love. No, no, no. But talking honestly about hard things that are happening is good. But not just like thinking, oh, I can just criticize and he'll get the idea. And also, again, from Love and Respect, I often hear wives complain that their husbands are too disconnected and passive on family matters. But why is he passive? Quite likely in the past, every time he tried to step up to the plate, she had a better idea. After a while, he just let her have her way. Okay, this I've seen a lot. I'm not saying this could only be women doing this too, because it depends on the dynamic in the relationship. But I've seen this a lot where the main caretaker of the child is like always correcting. Oh, you didn't put the kid to bed quite right. Or you didn't do this. You didn't do it this way. Oh, no, you need to do it this way. Give your spouse some freedom to love and care for the kids the way he or she wants to. The surest way to force someone to withdraw and never to initiate doing anything is to constantly tell them that they're doing it wrong. That's unmotivating. And pretty soon, you know, you're maybe pissed because you're like, why isn't he or she doing more? It's like, well, you had a part in driving him or her to that place. It's really important to give them space and let them love the way they want. So last thing, just general, you know, try to look at your spouse the way God sees them. Tim Keller said, you're helping your spouse become something glorious. If we can think about our spouses like a work in progress, if we can think about our spouses as a cherished child of God who's being transformed into something great, that can help us as we're dealing with the day-to-day hardship of all the things that we deal with. All right, that's all I got. Just thank you for all these people and just like their different comments. And I know, God, that this, it's a challenging time to raise kids and to try to prioritize our spouses. And I'm just grateful that we work under your grace and that you're a loving God who's involved with us. And I pray that we can just be like people who hear your voice, who actually allow you to transform us and our spouses, who actually pay attention to the ways you're leading us and the way you're nudging us, and that we can rest in our confidence in you and learn how to love our spouses more effectively. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.